Now, normally, we do the movie reviews at this point. We have Eric Childress and Steve Procopi. And a lot of people did not go to the movies this weekend, which, you know, makes sense. So, as you guys are all, you know, we're all sort of confined to our houses at this point, as we should be. And so we're here to keep you company and give you company throughout the morning. We're here till 4 a.m. And then as soon as the show is over, I go straight back to my apartment. That's how it works. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, and let's get to it. Here's Eric Childress. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
And Steve Procopi. Hi, Steve.
Hey, how is everybody?
Well, you know, it's a little weird out there.
Yeah.
Very weird. Now, the South by Southwest Film Festival was supposed to be happening, right, Eric?
Yeah, I was supposed to be there this weekend, actually. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I mean, last, it was a week before the event was to take place, they City of Austin essentially canceled it.
Yeah.
And, you know, left a lot of people in the lurch. Some of the changes we've been seeing this week kind of started with that, particularly in the way that certain businesses, notably airlines, were handling such a crisis. And it's the beginning of starting to leave what we'll be talking about tonight, which is film, in a bit of a lurch.
Yeah.
Because imagine, I mean, South by Southwest is as big a festival as we have in this country, and you think about all the filmmakers that were going to have premieres there, and just subsequently canceled on a dime because of this. Yeah. And thankfully, a lot of people, including myself that I'm working on, are being given the opportunity to see these movies so they can still offer some of these filmmakers that need it the coverage that they need.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a weird time, man. It's just really weird. And I, you know, I know that is not just film festivals, but movies that are, you know, were going to be released have been delayed.
Yes.
And big ones too. I mean, you know, the Quiet Place Part Two was supposed to come out next week.
Yep.
And it's now indefinitely delayed. They delayed a Bond movie.
That was the start of it. Yeah, I mean, they delayed No Time to Die, and that was primarily because of, you know, the overseas dollar. You know, I don't want to be too cynical about it, but the reason why that was canceled so early is because they saw potentially dwindling returns overseas because of what's going on. So they just pushed it back to November. And now, as things basically escalated midweek, you know, Krasinski, you know, got Paramount to delay Quiet Place. Then Disney responded and delayed Mulan and Antlers and the New Mutants. That film's never going to get released.
I know.
Now we're sort of waiting to see. I mean, your Fast and Furious 9 got moved an entire year.
Yeah.
To April of next year, and
let's
now we're just sort of
Peter
waiting.
Rabbit 2, come on.
What were you
going
to say?
Peter Rabbit 2, you can't forget
Peter
that.
Rabbit
come
2,
on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's obviously this is affecting everybody around the world,
yeah.
And we'll all, you know, we got to stick together and we got to make it through this. So, Eric, Steve, hold on a second.
Yep.
All right, we're going to talk about some of the movies that that are available to be reviewed here. And then we're going to talk about, you know, because a lot of people, everybody is confined to their houses now, and you're going to be looking to entertain while you're home. You can read some books, you can listen to some music, but you can also watch some movies. And Steve and Eric have some recommendations for you being stuck in the house, and you know, if you want to watch some streaming services or watch a bunch of movies, that's a great way to fill your time while you're stuck in your house, and we'll give you some suggestions for that too.
Show me a river that's so deep. Show me a mountain so high. I'll show you love that'll last. Place where dreams of a dreamer and all the things you wish come true, yeah. I'd wish the world had all happy people, then there'd be no more wishing to do.
Nick DiCilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here on WGN. Be keeping you company and entertaining you throughout the morning till 4 a.m. And we're here live. And hopefully you guys are all hunkered in and relaxing. And we're going to entertain you now. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. 312-981-7200 if you would like to join us. Eric and Steve, we've got movie reviews to get to. And so Eric is here and Steve is here. Okay.
Hello.
All right. Hi. Steve, tell us about First Cow.
Sure. First Cow, well, which might end up being the biggest grossing film of the year if we keeps going. Some are better than others, but I don't think the director Kelly Reichardt has made a bad movie.
I love her stuff, man.
Yeah, I mean, from her early work to like Old Joy and her breakthrough film Wendy and Lucy to like this sort of essential fatalistic Meeks Cutoff, and then her last film Certain Women. She has sort of trained her eyes on stories of self-reliant women and sensitive men, and each journey is sort of patiently told and expertly realized. First Cow is about the bond of male friendship set in the Pacific Northwest sometime in that region, sort of gold rush era, the early 1800s. The story sort of involves a skilled cook named Cookie, who's played by John Magaro, who has sort of tagged along with a small group of fur trappers in the Oregon Territory, and the trappers can't stand him because he has trouble sort of locating and capturing decent food for their trip. But on this trail, he sort of spots this naked Chinese immigrant who is running away. His name is King Lu. He's played by Orion Lee. And he's running away from these Russians that he's been sort of traveling with, one of whom he may have accidentally killed, maybe not accidentally. But so sort of Cookie gives him some clothes and hides him, and eventually they part ways, but they're later reunited after a few weeks in this sort of smaller but growing town. The two end up living together and having not only a business but an actual friendship together. There's a wealthy landowner in the town, played by Toby Jones, who takes possession of the town's first cow, the title character. And Cookie sees this cow as an opportunity, and so every night he and Lou sneak onto the property where the cow is staying and steal milk to make these things called oily cakes that look basically just like fried dough, but they're basically become this delicacy in this mining town, or and they become so popular among the locals that they can't keep up with demand, and they are able to charge more and more as the days go on. And eventually they earn themselves a pretty tidy nest egg, and they're thinking about, you know, eventually when they get enough money, moving to California, maybe opening up a hotel or a restaurant. And so like all of Reichardt's films, the level of authenticity of both the location and the relationships are really what sell the story and bring us deep into the tension of every time they go to visit this cow. We're just like, we know they're going to get caught. We just sort of simply waiting for it to happen. And working from a novel by Jonathan Raymond, who also wrote the screenplay, there are these ideas about American entrepreneurial drive and how the idea of hitting on a million-dollar idea might drive someone to take chances they wouldn't normally. It's kind of like a form of insanity. And we see this feeling kind of creep into these two's otherwise very careful planning. Magaro and Lee really balance each other well with the sort of uneasy calm at first, but they get closer and begin to sort of see their dream life coming really close together with each new oily cake they make. But they get overtaken sort of by greed instead of being cautious. The film is primarily shot outdoors. There's a sequence, though, where Cookie is hired by this landowner to make this particular dish from the UK, and it's set inside his house, and it feels like another planet to these two guys because it's really a lovely house. They kind of get to see what their dreams might look like, and I think it scares them a little bit being in that house. So, and then they're even taken outside to meet the cow, and they get completely freaked out. So anyway, but the center of the movie is this wonderful friendship that is tested but resilient, and there's an ending that is sort of stark and uncompromising and really touching. And like I said, Riker's greatest gift will always be her ability to give her characters full and meaningful lives and to make us care about their fates and their struggles. First Cow is sort of built on that foundation, and the result is completely satisfying, captivating, and utterly unique in today's cinematic landscape. And if you can get a chance to see it before they shut the movie theaters down, you definitely should.
Okay. All right. That's First Cow. Okay, great. All right. Steve, tell us about Lost Girls.
Yeah, Lost Girls, I saw at Sundance, saw the premiere, the world premiere at Sundance, and now it's on Netflix. And it's anytime Amy Ryan is a leading role, you go see that movie. You just make a point to see that movie. So she plays Marie Gilbert. This is a true story, by the way. It plays Marie Gilbert, whose oldest daughter disappears, and then she goes to the police, and they are not particularly helpful in the investigation in this sort of gated Long Island community where the daughter was last seen. And we find out she was a sex worker, and that's part of the reason they're not really giving it the attention they should. But her search does bring the attention, but eventually the search sort of brings to the attention that there's been like over a dozen murdered sex workers in this part, this community, and she does not let the world forget this. The film's actually from documentary filmmaker Liz Garbus, who has actually been nominated for two Oscars for Best Documentary, The Farm way back in 98, and then What Happened to Miss Simone, which was very recently. And the film does feel like it has a lot of really beautiful, authentic touches to it. It's inspired by true events, like I said, detailed in Robert Kolker's nonfiction book called Lost Girls, An Unsolved American Mystery. And as you tell from the title, we're told right at the beginning of the film, the mystery of the deaths of these women have still not been solved. And so if you had just sort of stumbled upon that ending and not known that was the ending, I think that would be pretty frustrating, but they tell you that right up front. And so at least you know you're not going to get that kind of ending. It's real life, so it doesn't always end with finding the killer. But it really does become a powerful statement about giving a voice and representation to women and to victims who are considered undesirable, unacceptable members of a community. There's some great supporting roles. Kevin Corrigan is in this, playing a sort of conspiracy theorist in the community whose conspiracies are actually more or less accurate, and he has a pretty good idea of who's committing these murders, even. Thomasin McKenzie from Jojo Rabbit is there as Amy Ryan's, I think she's her next oldest daughter. Gabriel Byrne is in this as the police captain who's kind of on his way out, but he wants to leave something of a legacy behind with this case, and he'd like to get it solved. Dean Winters plays a detective who really doesn't care about solving this case for some reason, mainly because the missing person is a sex worker. The film is kind of shocking at times. It's going to make you angry at a lot of different people, including Amy Ryan's character, because she withholds some information about her relationship with her daughter that leads to the police, accusing her of being a terrible mother, and that her motivations are maybe not just because she cares, but it's a very sad and moving movie at times. And like I said, Amy Ryan's in the lead, so you just have to watch it. I really, really enjoyed this film.
Okay, and it's on Netflix, right?
Netflix, yeah. Okay, it's on there now. Yeah, it started Friday.
Okay, so it's called Lost Girls. Okay, all right, Eric.
Yeah.
Tell us about The Hunt.
Okay. People might know this movie as the one that was actually delayed from its release last September. It was coming, previews are being shown everywhere right at the time that we had a couple more mass shootings. And then, of course, the president and the his Fox News enablers tweeted more about it and said some pretty nasty things because they thought that they knew what the film was about. Well, let me tell you what the film is about. You've probably seen in the previews, everyone, it involves a group of people who are basically plopped down in the middle of some place, evidently kidnapped, given some weapons, and they are subsequently hunted one by one, presumably by, some rich people who are out there pulling the kind of most dangerous game / hard target type of sporting event, if you will. There are rumors, the people who have been kidnapped talk about rumors that this thing has been happening, and as several of them die. One of them is actually very good at survival, and she's played by Betty Gilpin, who has a particular knack for fighting off the people that she deems to be threats to her livelihood. And thus begins a journey to try to get to the bottom of exactly what is going on, and this involves more death, more mayhem, and whatnot. That's about all you really want to know. The previews, you know, up to this point have done a pretty good job of keeping you in the dark as to what this movie is about, but to say that this movie is not political in the slightest would just be incredibly misleading.
Okay, Eric, hang on.
Yeah.
All right, Eric and Steve are here, and we're talking about the movie The Hunt, which is out in theaters right now, and we'll get a full review of that. And we also have some recommendations for streaming services, movies that you can watch while you're stuck in the house. And, you know, just to give you something get some suggestions on what you can watch while you're home. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. More coming up.
She's come undone. She didn't know what she was headed for. When I found what she was headed for, it was too late. She's come undone. She found the mountain that was far too high. And when she found out she couldn't fly, it was too late. It's too late.
Nick DiGilio here, live in the Skyline studio here until 4 a.m., keeping you company. WGN is here for you 24-7, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And we're talking movie reviews with Steve Procopi and Eric Childress. And Eric was telling us about the new film called The Hunt. You were telling us a little bit about it. Continue, Eric.
Where I left off was basically saying that, you know, contrary to, you know, some people might be thinking that there was a little bit of an overreaction in regards to the politics when this movie was going to come out last September. But it's a matter of exactly, you know, where the side of the politics is basically, you know, comes out in this film. You know, for the people that are being hunted are referred to as deplorables, the rich people who apparently are putting on this event led by Hillary Swank refer to a really horrible president. So it's very clear exactly what side, you know, these people are on politically. And yet that is the one element of the film that I think is really kind of ham-handed and overused. As much as I've been sort of waiting to see a movie to really dig in and tackle, you know, these kind of issues in a satirical way that we have been, you know, dealing with, you know, this past, you know, administration, this current administration, actually. This film, it's like watching someone on Twitter pick out the most obvious hashtags and applying them not just in name but also in the characterizations. Like everyone on each side of this spectrum are the sort of the most extreme stereotypical examples, both the liberals and the conservatives. And that aspect of the movie it made me wince more often than not. And particularly considering that they're trying to play a sort of good people on both sides mentality, and that doesn't really quite work either, especially when they sort of reveal something about one character very late in the game that really sort of strips that veneer right off, whether or not, you know, they're good or deserving of things that's happening to them. That being said, Craig Zobel, who, you know, did a film years ago called Compliance, that is a much better example of how to sort of dig into these political social issues about following, you know, following your instincts and stuff. That's a much better film. But he's actually a pretty decent action director. The first sequence of the movie where everyone is kidnapped is really well well done, full of a lot of surprises, and it's quite funny. There's a climactic fight that's very well done. The violence in this movie is right there in your face, and is often fun in that exploitive way that we would hope a movie like this would be. And there are some pretty solid laughs throughout, sometimes coupled with the violence. I think the middle of the movie, the middle of the movie makes the whole film, I mean, the whole film in general, I think, feels more like a television pilot than an actual movie. And the film itself is only about 85 minutes long. It feels like there's, like Damon Lindelof, Nick Hughes, who wrote the film, it almost feels like something that they could have pitched in a Lost kind of way, that all these characters gets dropped into the situation and then they have to deal with it over the course of an entire season. But here they only have 85 minutes and they just sort of wrap it up as best as they can. So it's kind of a near miss for me, but there is some good stuff to be had in it.
Okay. All right. What do you think, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't even mention that one of the producer on this film, the main producer, is Jason Blum, and when he presents something that's sort of quote-unquote controversially topical, we either get like the Purge franchise or we get something like Get Out, and realize he doesn't really creatively have much to do with that, but he does back these things. And then when you pair that with Lindelof and Carlton Cuse, who wrote this and produced it as well, and they did the Watchmen series, which was one of the best things I've seen on TV in quite a while. I mean, there's like some brain power going on here. So it's kind of weird how watered down and dull and blunt, like and vague the rhetoric is here, the political rhetoric. It really is. That's fine. That's only part of the film. But I mean, honestly, the film kind of lives or dies based on your reaction to this final fight between Hilary Swank and Betty Gilpin. And by the way, Betty Gilpin, who plays this character called Crystal, is incredible in this film. Like, she's sort of fantastically self-reliant and slightly insane, and she displays like a real aptitude for weapons and fighting and survival skills, and we don't really know why for a while. And then Swank, they have this 15-20 minute just hand-to-hand combat thing that's just, but they're also talking while they're fighting, and that's really funny, and there's sort of a battle of wills going on, and they're just beating the crap out of each other. And in those final moments, the banter and the fighting improve the film exponentially, and it also sort of, as Eric mentioned, sort of reveals the inherent flaw of Hilary Swank's sort of grand design with this hunt. But the two women do really elevate the film. It doesn't. I mean, I wish it hadn't tried to be anything more than just a dark, dark comedy with sort of action punctuating the story throughout. But I will say I was never really bored by it, and it has the good sense, again, as Eric said, to clock in at under 90 minutes. So just get in, get out. And like I said, Gilpin is so much better than the material she's being given here, and in a lot of ways, her performance really saves the hunt from being deplorable. So anyway, but I'd say it's also a mild recommendation from me.
Okay. All right. I love Betty Gilpin. I think she's
great. Oh, yeah.
And she's fantastic. So I've always been a fan of hers, so that's cool. All right. Well, it's out there, and we never thought we would see it, but it's there. Check it out. That's The Hunt. All right, Steve, tell us about Bloodshot.
Bloodshot. Okay. So this is our last big tentpole movie for a while. So we've reached the point now where we have to start asking ourselves if certain films are worth risking our health to go see, and in the theaters at least. And my current sort of frame of mind is, as long as they keep putting them in the theaters, I'm going to try to do everything in my power to see them. I'm slightly insane that way, I know, but that being said, I'm not sure the comic book adaptation Bloodshot, which is based on a variant comic series, is the one you want to leave the house to check out. So, although the irony wasn't lost on me that the film is about a guy whose blood is altered so that he can repair his body almost instantaneously. But the film today feels more like wish fulfillment than actual fantasy. Anyway, Vin Diesel takes a sort of a rare step out of the Fast and Furious franchise to star as Ray Garrison, an elite soldier and a bona fide hero who returns home to his wife, only to be tracked down by terrorists who are seeking revenge and information, and who end up killing his wife and him. He wakes up in a lab run by Emil Harding, who's played by Guy Pearce, who's positively oozing with a perfect balance of sort of soothing and calming, and then also sort of slithery. He runs this high tech company, and that's been given permission by the government to use nanotechnology to revive previously dead soldiers. According to Harding, Garrison is the first to successfully come back from this process alive, and with no ill effects from the treatment. It also makes him really strong. Gives his body the ability to repair itself within seconds. There are some other modified soldiers in the lab, including ones with like enhanced legs and sight and even breathing abilities. That particular ability goes to a character named KT, who's played by Issa Gonzalez from Baby Driver and Hobbs and Shaw. And she shares one trait with Garrison, is that neither one of them seems to be able to find clothes that fit them. They're always like three sizes too small. Anyway, Garrison's memory is mostly gone as a result of this process, and he has these flashes of a face of a man who he thinks killed his wife. And before he goes out in the field on an official mission, he wants to sort of get revenge on this person, and so they agree to help him. But what he doesn't know is that the doctor is sort of implanting memories in his head, and he's been going through this process multiple times, each time with a different face on that killer, and he's basically knocking off, the doctor is having him knock off all these different people and turning him into sort of the perfect assassin because...
Okay, Steve, hang on a second.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, Eric and Steve are here, and we've got more, we're going to tell you more about Bloodshot, and we've got some recommendations for streaming since everybody's going to be stuck in the house, and we're going to give you some movie recommendations that you can watch while you're home.
Yes, the same kind of story seems to come down from long ago. Two friends having coffee together when something flies by their window. It might be out on that lawn, which is wide, at least half of the playing field. Because there's no explaining, your imagination can make you see and feel.
Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 4, keeping you company, keeping you happy, and we're all in this together, and we're here 24-7 for you. And the news is next, coming up in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Coming up after midnight, we'll be joined by Paul Farvar and Marty DeRosa. They have a podcast called Make Us a Mixtape. So, and they're also stand-up comedians. So we're going to talk to those guys about their podcast and even more. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. Steve Prokopy and Eric Childress join me every, Sunday night / Monday morning to, talk about the new movies. And, Eric is here and,
hello.
And Steve, you were telling us about.
Yes.
You were telling us before the break here about Bloodshot. That's the latest Vin Diesel vehicle.
Yes. So basically, he's a trained killer, but he's also motivated by this thing being personal because he thinks these people have killed his wife. So first-time feature director Dave Wilson, who comes out of the sort of video game and special effects world, has taken what is a fairly interesting premise and made it feel like a generic video game with a hero that essentially can't die on his series of missions that feel more like levels in a video game than anything like emotionally driven. I like a good Vin Diesel movie. I think he has sort of a loudish charm that is kind of amusing. He's basically playing the same guy in every film at this point, including wearing the same wardrobe most of the time. he's spouting off this sort of vaguely spiritual dialogue, and not surprisingly, his family means something to him in this movie, too. So, but Bloodshot is sort of blisteringly familiar most of the time, and it leaves no action movie cliche from the last 20 years untouched. Admittedly, I still get a little bit of joy out of watching Vin Diesel get brutalized the way he does here, but that's about as much fun as I could muster from this sort of subpar action dud. So not a recommendation for me.
Okay, there you go. All right, Bloodshot. So now we don't know what movies are coming out. They're not. Are they just going to stop releasing movies? Do we have anything coming out next week?
Well, I think, I don't know, I can't say for sure whether or not that theatrical releases, because, I mean, in New York, they are actually shutting down movie theaters.
In L.A.,
now,
too, they just announced L.A.
probably
as well.
Soon, here, even, but I think there's a lot of stuff is going to be moving, or you know, a lot of stuff is already planned for, like, streaming services and stuff, so.
Yeah. All right.
Well, I will say, I don't know if you heard, Nick, that, like, about 2 hours ago, the Gene Siskel Film Center said it was closing until April 10th.
Wow.
So they are cutting their European Union Film Festival in half, basically, which is, like, one of their biggest things they have every year. So I would not be surprised. If the movie theaters in Chicago stay open through the week, I'll be shocked.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I figured this was going to happen, too.
So there might not even be an issue with new releases, big or small, next week.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, so, you know, people are going to be stuck in their houses, and you guys have some recommendations on what you can stream and what titles would be fun to watch while you're in the house. Eric, why don't you give us a few?
Yeah, you know, I was trying to avoid movies that would remind people of what's going on right now and then realize that I failed at that pretty miserably. But these are all pretty great movies that I think, you know, at least will temporarily get their minds at least, you know, somewhat adjacent off of what's going on. You know, Bong Joon-ho just won the Oscar for Parasite. I would go back and recommend Snowpiercer, these are all available on Netflix, by the way. So if people are looking for recommendations, these are all on Netflix. Snowpiercer, you know, you see Captain America in action in a futuristic setting is really fantastic. Much better politically than The Hunt is. Then I chose Jeremy Saulnier's Green Room, about a punk band trapped in a back room of a little club that is run by Nazis. So that's an absolutely wonderful thriller. And then just by chance, I happen to also choose Room, that Brie Larson won an Oscar for, though I still think a lot of people haven't seen that movie. And it also stars the great Jacob Tremblay as her son. That's an incredibly tense and also ultimately wonderful movie. Then for laughs, Kevin Smith's, one of his best and most underrated films, Zach and Mary Make a Porno, is on Netflix. And, you know, I thought that, you know, be a fun little suggestion for people who are cooped up at home, but, you know, maybe you don't want to get that close. And then ultimately, I'm also recommending a film from a few years ago that was my number one film of the year, and that's David Lowery's A Ghost Story, which I think, you know, it's a film that we would typically say is not for everyone in its style, but I think if people would just sort of sit down, watch it, and sort of reflect on what it's about and our place in this world, I think and I hope they will come out the other side of it really moved and really have like a great new outlook on life.
Yeah, and there's an especially fantastic scene that involves just a woman eating a pie for 10 minutes.
Yes.
So, all right, Steve, what are your recommendations for people as we're stuck inside?
The first one I have is one that reminds me of, for a couple of reasons, the Spectacular Now, James Ponsoldt's film, because it was played at our very first Chicago Critics Film Festival, which we just had to postpone.
Yeah.
But it also played at Ebert Fest, which also just got canceled, I think just flat out canceled. But it reminds me of Roger Ebert because it was one of the last movies he reviewed and he gave it 4 stars. And it's also just a terrific film, also with a supporting role by Brie Larson. I picked 2004's Miracle. It's a great sports movie, but it's also an early film by the director Gavin O'Connor, who just released the Way Back last week. I think the guy is a terrific filmmaker, and it's one of the greatest sports stories in history about the Olympic hockey team, U.S. Olympic hockey team in 1980. I picked Ex Machina. It was my favorite film of 2015, but also because I think Alex Garland is a sci-fi genius, and he has a show, I believe it's on Hulu right now, called Devs.
Yep.
That is supposed to be terrific, and he also put out Annihilation last year? Right, yeah. And it's a really underrated film and a really scary film. I picked Coraline just because Leica never gets the respect it should.
I agree. I totally agree.
I think they have a perfect record, and Coraline was one of the earliest ones. Based on a Neil Gaiman book, but it's just a terrifically animated stop-motion film. And I picked the Oscar winner for Best Documentary last year, American Factory, because it shows another way in which China has impacted the United States recently. So, this film, it's about manufacturing, but it really is a really insightful film about how cultures sometimes are just never going to blend in the workplace, especially when it's Americans and Chinese trying to work together. But it's a terrific film and definitely worthy of an Oscar. So okay. Those are my five.
All right. Those are just some of the streaming recommendations as we're all stuck inside.
All on Netflix.
And they're all available on Netflix. Every one of the titles that that Eric and Steve mentioned are all available on Netflix. Okay, well, we'll see what we're going to talk about next week.
Yes.
We'll figure something out. We'll figure something out to talk about next week. But everything is kind of up in the air, as we all know. It's a very, very strange time. Thank you guys for joining us. Appreciate it. We will definitely talk next week.
Yep.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks.
Eric and Steve, they'll be with us again next week. We'll figure out whether there's going to be any new movies to talk about. That's one thing. But we'll definitely have them on to talk. And my thanks to Eric and to Steve.